Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. Thanks for tuning into the show today. You're going to be glad you did because we have all these amazing listener questions, and we're going to do our best to answer most of them. Today, it's Ask the Guys on the Real Estate Guys radio program. If you've been listening to the Real Estate Guys for a while, then you've heard about the legendary Investor Summit. Simply put, it's the highest level event we do, and the content, faculty, and attendees are amazing. If you're serious about taking your real estate investment to the next level, consider joining us. You'll spend an entire week with like-minded investors, world-class educators, and real-world professionals, and you'll have a blast. Join Peter Schiff, Ken McElroy, Tom Hopkins, and the Real Estate Guys for the 13th Annual Investor Summit at Sea. It all begins March 5th, 2015 in Miami, Florida. Visit realestateguysradio.com and click the tab that says Summit to learn more and reserve your spot. The event is more than 80% sold out, so make plans to join us. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click Summit and spend a week with the Real Estate Guys and an all-star faculty on the 13th Annual Investor Summit. Don't miss the boat. Welcome to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms. Let's meet the guys. Joining me this week, as almost every week, it's our financial strategist, co-host Russell Gray.
Hey, Robert.
And the man we call the godfather of real estate. He's been investing in seven different decades, Bob Helms.
Hey, guys. Great to be with you.
And happy 80th birthday to the godfather.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Oh, my goodness. 80 years. Hard to even imagine. Just before you know it, like Burgess Meredith says in Grumpy Old Men, you look back and one day you're just not 80 anymore. So happy birthday, Bob.
Thanks, guys.
Still got the mojo.
Absolutely. Well, we've got a great show for you. This is one of our favorite shows to do. Every few weeks, we go through all the wonderful letters that you guys send us, which, of course, are all emails. And it's called Ask the Guys. So we've got just a bunch of great questions. And here's how it works. We are not tax professionals or attorneys. That's the disclaimer. So what we're going to give you is not advice. We're giving you ideas and information. But with that caveat, let's go to the phones, as they say. Lots of good questions today. Here's the first one. This is from Eric in Albany, Oregon. He says, hello, I'm a 22-year-old trying to get started. I know no bank will lend me money for a house, and I don't know how people find private investors. Do you guys have any tips on going about getting a loan or finding private investors? I have good credit and have been working on it since I was 18. The problem is I don't have a big down payment to put down on a house. All right. Well, Eric, first of all, congratulations for recognizing that credit is important. And when you're starting off, it's hard to get good credit. When you're 18, how do you get credit? How do you prove that you have the ability to pay people back and follow your commitments and so forth? So you're 4 years into that. That's great.
Yeah, I think just addressing that topic for anybody out there in the younger end of the audience that's interested in learning how do you build credit, you have to establish some trade lines. You know, if you get your cell phone, that's great. Get yourself that first credit card. Use it judiciously. Use it. Pay it down. Use it. Pay it down. Use it. Pay it down. And just start establishing a pattern of behavior that shows that you pay your bills on time, that you don't need the credit, but that you use the credit responsibly. And that'll get you to the point where you have a great credit score. Ever since the financial crisis, having a good credit score has been more important.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there used to be all kinds of loans available no matter what your credit was. And even then, the better your credit score, the better the loans for these kind of purchases, home purchases. And the reason is pretty obvious. A lender is looking for your track record, just like an employer wants to see your resume, talk to some of your previous employers, perhaps, see what kind of work do you do? Do you show up on time? Are you a good employee? Do you have the right attitude? Do you call in sick a lot? Those kind of things. A lender wants to make sure that when you're given the opportunity to borrow money, that you pay it back.
Basic thing. In the mortgage side of the business, there's a process called underwriting, and that underwriting is building a file that is going to document you and the deal. They want to know about your credit. They want to know about your income. They want to know about your assets. They want to know about your debts, and they want to know about the property. Those are usually the five components of your credit file. A mortgage consultant, a mortgage broker, a loan officer that's active in the business is going to know what the current lending guidelines are. And when I say current, literally they change all the time. Right now, the new secretary of HUD is pressing the industry to loosen the lending guidelines to make it easier for people to obtain homes. It's no secret that home ownership has been on the decline in the United States, especially among the millennials. And yet every observer of the economy knows that in order for us to have true housing recovery, the millennials are going to have to get engaged. So you have a lot of things working in your favor in that regard. One thing you open up with though, Eric, as you say, I know no banks will lend to me. I'm going to challenge you on that. Do you really know? The way you really know is you go to a mortgage professional and you ask them to pre-qualify you. You ask them if what's available to you. There are quite a few first-time homebuyer type programs out there, depending on your particular situation and where you live. But a good mortgage professional is going to be familiar with those programs. You might be pleasantly surprised about how little down payment you really need in order to get into a home, particularly if you're talking about a property in an inexpensive area. So I would recommend the first thing you do before you assume that you can't get a loan is to go have a mortgage professional work with you to find out what you really can do. And just like you went to work on your credit when you're 18, you can continue to work with someone's guidance to help you prepare your profile so that you will be eligible even sooner than you think you would be to be able to qualify for that mortgage.
Yeah, you never know until you try. And once you go through the process, you're going to get the feedback on what it is they want to see. Now, that's a different issue than not having a big down payment saved up. Most young people who are working on their credit and doing something for a living, it isn't their maybe their ideal job. They're not raking in the big dough, but you're making a start, and that's critical. So the very premise of this question is here's a person that has credit, some credit, good credit score. We don't know if enough credit to borrow, but no capital or little capital. So part of what you also have to go to work on is how do you accrue down payment?
Well, you know, there's a whole collection of people out there that have cash but no credit, and they would love to partner with you. Back in the day, I'm sure, Bob, you can comment on this. Something that was very popular the last time we had a financial crisis and money was tight and interest rates were high was something called equity sharing, where people would get together and they would go into partnership on a property, and one person would bring the credit and make the payment and actually even occupy the property in a lot of cases, and another person would bring in the down payment. They would agree to split the deal and whatever terms they came to, and somewhere down the road they would cash out, and either they would sell the property and go their separate ways and take what they got, or they might decide that one partner could buy the other partner out if that's what they decided to do. The thing is, it's very creative, which means that it's flexible, and when you find someone, you just have to figure out what their needs are and then what your needs are and come up with a deal that you're both happy with.
Well, in fact, before we even get to that, our very next question is someone with your opposite problem, Eric, so just stay tuned.
Just one comment on equity sharing. Those partnerships actually worked very well for the participants. Interestingly enough, they were limited by loans. What do I mean by that? What I mean is that you couldn't get a loan from just anybody. If it wasn't mom and dad who was your partner, you're what we'd call a non-related co-borrower, then you had to get your loan from a savings and loan that specialized in what we call portfolio lending. What does that mean? That means they didn't resell the loan in the market. They kept their loans. That's what allowed them to decide what parameters worked and what didn't.
So, Bob, Eric is 22. He has no idea what a savings and loan is.
First of all, Eric, congratulations on looking at this at age 22. A lot of your peers aren't thinking about it yet. So you're ahead on the curve.
All right. So I think the premise is this. You're making an assumption you can't get credit. And there's not just traditional banks. There's other lenders. Do you think a private lender might be interested in a guy with enthusiasm and a good credit score? And right? I mean, there's lots of different ways to do this. And then there's the whole partner thing. Could you partner with somebody maybe because they have experience? I'll tell you what, there's a lot of us who have a ton of real estate experience. We probably have some capital to invest. And we are what we call Fannie and Freddie'd out, meaning that we can no longer get a traditional mortgage because we have too many of those mortgages.
And here's where you're in good shape, because as an asset class or a subset of the real estate market, single family homes is still very attractive. You know, there's an issue right now in the apartment space. I'm not saying you can't get good apartment deals, but the cap rates are low, meaning people have bid the pricing up. It's been a very popular asset class, whereas there's still a lot of bargains available in the single family home space. So I'm guessing that's going to be the space that you're going to end up starting in, and that's where your first-time home buyer program may be advantageous, better interest rates. And I think you're going to find some cash investors out there that would be interested in partnering with you. And so the next part of your question is, how do I find those people? You just start networking. You start asking around. You start talking to people that are interested in property in the area you're interested in. And I think if you just start networking, pretty soon you're going to find somebody that probably is going to have more than enough capital, because when you're 22, 20, 30, $40,000 is just like a ton of money. When you're talking to somebody in their 40s or 50s, it's still a lot of money, but it's not unobtainable. And what is harder for them maybe is the opportunity to have someone like you with a nice pristine credit score that can be pledged to the project. And if there's profit to be made, you're going to get people who are takers.
So young people today that have income and credit can generally find a program to buy a home to live in, not necessarily an investment property because of underwriting guidelines. Sometimes today, lenders want to see you have a history. You have the experience of renting out property. Well, that's a catch-22. If I can't get a loan to get a property that has renters, how can I have experience renting? Well, you start with a house. And maybe at 22, you can find a house that you can maybe rent some bedrooms out of. You qualify for the house, you start getting some rent, right? We've seen people do that. A lot of ways to do it. Get the first house under your belt's important, though. So it's a great question. Hope we gave some ideas there. Let's fast forward to another question. This comes from Felicia in Tracy, California. She says, hey guys, really wanted to get your input. I'm in the middle of buying a group of 8 properties using a commercial lender, and I have a few credit issues that have put a snag in the process. I have a foreclosure, and I'm now looking for a credit partner, but I'm not sure how to structure the deal. I don't need any cash, just the credit. Can you help me with ideas? So we do not play matchmaker. This is not about getting...
But we could.
We're not getting Eric and Felicia together. What we are saying, though, is this is... And we get a lot of email, a lot more than we can answer today. And we're sorry if we don't get to your question, but we're trying to answer the ones that a lot of people have. And this is a question a lot of people have. Either, how do I get a credit partner because I'm Fannie and Freddie'd out or I have a snag? Or how do I get the capital? How do I get to where I need to be? So in this case... This is a gal who's got enough money to do the deal. She's got a problem in her credit history that this particular commercial lender has a challenge with. Now, I'll tell you what. Today, if you have a foreclosure in your past, you can still get a loan for a home to live in. Talk to your mortgage professional. But a commercial lender has different underwriting guidelines. When Russ talked about the underwriting part of it, that's different for every product type. It's different for every lender. It's different by state, by country, by jurisdiction. So in this case, she's looking for a partner that doesn't need cash but needs credit. And the kind of credit they need is commercial credit.
Yeah. So in this particular case, Felicia, it really comes back to the same question. So you're talking to a commercial lender, and I don't know if they're a direct lender or a broker. So the person who's on the other end of that wants to do the deal. You're a customer to them. They make money when they fund the deal. They want to do the deal. They're looking for reasons to do the deal, but they need to make sure that it meets their underwriting guidelines, make it through committee and all of the rigmarole that goes on backstage. But the point is they can help you figure out who you need to bring to the party. And so find out from them what the ideal credit partner would look like, number one, and then you have to go find that person, which is why you always, constantly, forever want to be obsessed with building your brand, building your network, going out there, always expanding the number of people you're connected to that are interested in real estate investing, finding out what they have, finding out what they need, finding out what they want, and then knowing at some point down the road you're either going to connect them to somebody or something like this deal that helps them meet their need. At the same time, there's something in it for you.
Well, and also, what's she bringing to the party? This is a deal where she's going to be the one who's managing, and she's got real estate experience. This is a gal we know. She's been on a couple of our field trips. We know that she's doing the thing, and so that's the kind of partner somebody wants. There's some partners that want to be hands-on. There's some partners that want to be hands-off. Everyone brings something to the party. So what you're doing is you're looking for a fit in not only what each party brings, but you're also looking for common ground in terms of the way they think.
Right. Well, I think the thing that's important here is, especially when it comes to commercial, because you have to deal with issues of recourse. Sometimes somebody says, well, you need a credit partner, and we think, oh, credit score. Well, it's probably not credit score. It could be balance sheet. It could be somebody who's got some substantial net worth to pledge against a personal guarantee. There are other loans, lenders out there where you can get a non-recourse loan, and so there is no personal guarantee. Now it's about somebody's track record, history, ability to manage money, experience, and the particular type of property it is. So again, this is where your mortgage professional has to coach you through finding the right profile and partner, and then you're you're going to have to do the work of finding that. And your specific question is, how do you find a deal that makes sense? Your partner is going to tell you what that is. As the two of you negotiate back and forth, hey, this is what I want. This is what I need. This is what I have. What do you have? What do you want? What do you need? And you go through these iterations back and forth until you strike a deal that makes sense. And hopefully you can. Once you get that, you bullet point it on a piece of paper that we affectionately call a memorandum of understanding, which is just a memo that you draft that says, this is what we've agreed to. When you get it to that point, then you take it to the attorney and you say, okay, Mr. Attorney, turn this into a legal document that really says it in proper legalese, and then you do your deal.
Right. So the whole thing about structuring the deal, there's just a ton of different variables, and it comes down to, what is each person bringing to the party? This may be something that is fairly benign for someone with a big balance sheet and credit profile to do. On the other hand, the deal doesn't get done without that person. So what is fair? I love that word, by the way. When you're negotiating and you sit down with somebody, whether they're right in there or they're off to left field, say, well, let's focus on what would be fair. Given what I'm putting in, all the money, and I found the deal, and I've got the management in place, and what you're doing, pledging your balance sheet, what would be fair? And just fine, and you're looking for meetings of the mind. If the person goes, yeah, well, 80% to me, probably not fair. Is 50-50 fair? I don't know. I think if you're in control of the property and need to be, you probably need at least controlling interest. But again, that's all subject to negotiation.
I think you're after a win-win. And ultimately, that's a conversation. You know, you want it to be good for them. And if you bring that attitude and you ask them, hey, I want to make this a win for you, and I hope you want to make it a win for me, so that when we get the deal done, we both say, hey, not only was that good, but let's go do that again. And that's what you're aiming for. It doesn't have to be a zero-sum game. You know, a lot of times the thing that you need is the thing that somebody else has and is willing to pledge to get the thing that you've brought to the table. In this case, Felicia, you're bringing a lot. You found the deal. You're bringing the money. You're going to handle the operations. For a guy out there that's sitting on a balance sheet that he's trying to get some yield on, that would be a pretty interesting opportunity.
Just one quick thing, Felicia, that's this. When you form any kind of a partnership, make it clear what you're doing. Make sure you both understand what each of you are bringing to the table, who is going to do what, what's the timetable, how do we get from here to there.
It's your questions and our answers. It's Ask the Guys today on the Real Estate Guys radio program. More when we come back. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Live nationwide, you're listening to The Real Estate Guys. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com.
If you love real estate and have always wanted to own your own business, listen up. The Real Estate Guys and their panel of experts want to teach you how to go full-time fast in the real estate syndication business. These next few years may go down in history as one of the best times ever to acquire investment real estate. There are deals everywhere if you know where to look and how to assemble the resources. The Secrets of Successful Syndication Seminar will show you how to make big money doing big deals from a team of experts that have syndicated projects totaling more than $1 billion. Don't wait for someone to give you a raise or create a job for you. Attend the Secrets of Successful Syndication and learn how to build a team, raise capital, find deals, and make full-time money in 6 months or less. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events. All the big players use syndication as a way to diversify risk, optimize profits, and earn big money. You can too. Go to realestateguysradio.com and click on events.
Hi, this is Patrick Donahoe of Paradigm Life. Over the last few years, I've had the privilege of sharing the services of Paradigm Life with you loyal Real Estate Guys Radio listeners through our website, www.beyourbank.com, and also on the annual Investor Summit at Sea. Subsequently, we have seen a variety of financial situations across the socioeconomic spectrum and how everyone, regardless of their situation, would improve their financial lives by following the system we specialize in. As a result of this experience, we have created an online e-learning system so anyone without obligation can learn about the infinite banking concept. This free e-learning program is found on our website, www.beyourbank.com. So check it out today. The website again is www.beyourbank.com.
Hi, this is Simon Black from SovereignMan.com, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program, the number one downloaded podcast on real estate investing. Thanks for tuning into the program. Hey, join The Real Estate Guys in New Orleans for the 40th Annual New Orleans Investment Conference. You can find out all the details on our website at realestateguysradio.com. Click events. You'll see New Orleans Investment Conference. Come and join the Real Estate Guys, Peter Schiff, Alan Greenspan, and a whole bunch of great folks. It's going to be an amazing event. It's Ask the Guys Today. Your questions, our answers. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click the button that says Ask the Guys. That's how you get a question like this to us. This is from Isaiah in Brandon, South Dakota. He says, hey guys, I found your show 3 hours ago, and I'm on my third show.
Slacker.
I don't think I'll ever stop listening. You guys are great to listen to and extremely knowledgeable. Well, go on. My question is, on your podcast, A Brave New World, you mentioned that there will be a new platform for connecting the hands-on and hands-off investors. I'm a hands-on investor that is extremely new to the game, but don't be fooled. A raging fire has been lighted in me to become a real estate investor, and finding your podcast was like throwing gasoline on it. I could tell right away by the quality of the guests and the knowledge of you guys that I found my new pastime. I am in need of investors. However, I do not know how to take advantage of this new platform you mentioned. Are there websites that are available, or do I just Google around? All right. Well, first of all, thank you for the kind words, Isaiah, and get a life. But the platform we were talking about isn't a one single specific platform. What's happening is a variety of entrepreneurs are putting together mechanisms to connect people who use money to invest in real estate with those who have money to invest in real estate.
So this is probably one of the most exciting recent developments, not just in real estate investing, but investing in general. And it grew out of the Jobs Act, which we've covered in the past. So if you go to our special report section on the website, you'll see a couple of reports that have to do with the Jobs Act and crowdfunding. But and also we have some past podcasts on the topic as well. The point is that the securities laws that have existed for quite some time have really, in my opinion, been designed to funnel money into Wall Street and through publicly traded securities.
You think?
Yeah. So now, in order to get money to market faster in the Jobs Act, which was about creating jobs and getting money to flow, even though it's taken 4 years to actually get to the implementation, the idea is good. And that is, let's lower some of those barriers to entry for purveyors of private offerings. People have looked at platforms like Kickstarter, which is a peer-to-peer lending platform where people could go out and raise money from the crowd, if you will, and do projects, write books, create films, and all kinds of things. So this concept isn't really all that new, but getting it to the point where you could sell shares in a security like a limited liability company that owned real estate or was planning on investing in real estate, the ability to be able to do that has begun to open up. And so we're just beginning to see the technology of matching up people who have money with people who have deals begin to get developed. And they call that crowdfunding. So there are conferences on this concept of crowdfunding. And if you Google crowdfunding conferences, you'll probably find a few. I'd recommend that you actually just seek one out. Go to one and you'll see all kinds of people exhibiting. You'll see all kinds of breakout sessions talking about it and begin to get your mind around the way it works. And you'll quickly discover that these platforms are coming online and you can actually join them. You can either list your property on it or you can sign up as an investor. And in fact, we're going to be doing a show on this particular topic sometime in the very near future. We've got a good friend who's actually developing one of these platforms right now, and he'll really be able to give this greater treatment. We think it's worthy of an entire show. But in the meantime, there's plenty of information out there on the internet and at these conferences. Go and check it out. But that's what we're talking about. It's called crowdfunding.
Now, I will point out this. It's already been apparent that many of these folks who have these platforms are vetting the deals and the promoter. The promoter or the syndicator, the sponsor is the person who's putting the deal together. And my guess is it's going to be hard to be a brand new green promoter because they're going to try to find out what experience you have because that's what people are interested in, the risk factors, how many times you've done this before, what's your real estate experience. So here's how you get ready. You continue to do deals. You can't rely on the internet funding your deals. As great as we think the opportunity is for crowdfunding, it's not a matter of, well, now all I need to do is just my executive summary, pop it online, and boom, I'm funded. Probably not going to happen that way.
Well, you're still competing. It's about building your brand. It's about building your resume. It's about building your track record. It's about getting in a position to be able to have a story to tell prospective investors why you over the many thousands of other people that are out there pitching their deals. So it is going to be more competitive. So Robert makes an excellent point, which is, you know, you're not waiting for the magic formula or the magic pill or the silver bullet or whatever. You're taking daily steps towards getting in position. But part of that that is educating yourself, you know, not just in doing the hands-on deals and building the track record, but being familiar with these changes and the things that are happening. Of course, we spend a lot of time tracking the changes and the trends in the industry so we can report that to you. So you want to definitely make sure that you're spending some time paying attention to that. But
he's spending all of his time listening to us.
I love it. Well, you probably want to expand your horizons a little bit. As good as we are, there's a lot of other great sources of information out there, but we appreciate the loyalty.
I will tell you, there's some good news, Isaiah. You don't have to wait for crowdfunding to get finished and perfect to start raising money. In fact, I would suggest you come out to the Secrets of Successful Syndication. We do a two-day event three times a year that is all about how you raise money to do bigger deals. The next one's in February in Las Vegas. Find out more on our website at realestateguysradio.com. But good luck to you, and congratulations on recognizing there's opportunity in this stuff, because there sure is. All right, our next question comes from Nakuna in Guyana, South Africa. All right, this question is, how do I write a business plan so that I can approach investors? Well, that is a very simple question from a long way away from us. And with listeners in more than 180 countries now, that's a cool thing. But this is critical. If you're trying to attract investors, just the things we were talking about with Isaiah, you've got to have a plan. So is that just an idea, or is it a written business plan? Well, when you look at the best promoters and syndicators there are, they all have great written business plans. So let's spend a minute talking about your business plan.
So your business plan is the way in writing that you're going to explain to somebody your deal. So it's got to have a story component where you explain kind of the why and the what. And then it's going to have a financial component where you break down the numbers and show somebody exactly what it means in terms of where money comes in, where money comes out, what the investor gets. We call it sources and uses of capital. And then you're going to have some explanation of the risks and some type of disclosures. And so depending on the jurisdiction that you're presenting, there's going to be different rules about what you have to have and how you go about that. But it all starts with having a good story and numbers that make sense. So you have to ask yourself the question, would I buy this? And if I would buy it, why would I buy it? Would I buy it because I really want to own it? Would I buy it because it's a really cool deal and I want to be able to have the prestige of it? Would I buy it because it's a good return on investment and it's a good reward for the risk I'm taking? Because return on investment, there are people who will buy very risky investments to make very high returns. There are people who will accept very low returns in order to have very safe investments. And there's everybody in between. You have to figure out what your deal is and tell that story, and then you have to tell it to the types of people who are interested in that kind of investment. And then you just have to make sure that you've done it in a way that's compliant with whatever laws you are operating under in the jurisdiction you're in.
Let's suppose you want to ask me to be an investor in your project. How are you going to do that? The best way for me to know where you're going is to see a written plan. Whether it's written and you show me the written plan or not, you must have it detailed. The real reason to write the plan is to make sure you know where you're going. It's to remove all the ambiguity of, I might do this and I might do that. In other words, it's a course, it's a direction. All plans are subject to change. Companies that write plans and have successful businesses often end up changing them in the midst of what they're doing. But guess what? They had something to change. So you can't start with a whim. You can't decide, I'm going to go do something. Why don't you give me some money and let's see how it works? I want to know that you've thought this out, that you've got the right experience, that you've put it together in such a way that it not only captures my attention, but that I think you've done a good enough job, I'd consider putting my money in your deal.
Well, and approach it from this angle, the person that you're proposing invest in your business or your real estate or wherever it is, imagine they know nothing. Your plan has to do a lot more than just say, here's what the plan is to buy this apartment building and here's the flip. You've got to explain the market, competition in the market, risk factors. Who's the team? A lot of credibility in the team. And you may say, well, boy, here in South Africa, I'm the team. No. You're going to bring in lots of people. Is there a broker involved? Is there an attorney, a tax professional? Is there property management? Are you getting bids from vendors? You're going to use third-party information to show what the opportunity is. If it's a good service or product, you're going to have information about that industry and the company. And there's a lot you put in a business plan. Now, also, be careful. Because if you hand somebody a 400-page document, they're not reading it. So part of the business plan is to start with everything and then hone it down. Ken McElroy, as a syndicator, puts out what he calls, not an executive summary, he calls it a business plan. And his business plan tends to be 30 to 40 pages, not 500, but also not 3. It's enough detail that you read through it and you have a real good sense of the project and where it's at and what they're going to do and the budget. You also have the sense that Ken knows what he's talking about, and his team is impressive. So you're looking to build your credibility in somebody's eyes who's considering a deal with you.
You know, I've got a lot of children, and as they were growing up, one of the things that I felt was important is that they knew how to write. They knew how to communicate in writing. And I said, if you want to become a great communicator in writing, you need to read a lot. If you read a lot of writing, you will learn how to be a good writer. Same thing is true here. If you want to learn how to write good business plans, look at a lot of good business plans. Look at them. You know, I like to watch Shark Tank because on Shark Tank, you watch these guys come up and they have a great idea. Some of them try and raise the money on pure enthusiasm, pure sizzle. The discipline of writing a business plan will help you flesh out all the devil in the details where you find out that, hey, even though it sounds super good, it doesn't make any financial sense. And you'll look at how the sharks often really want to delve into the numbers. Does this deal make sense? It's great that it's sexy. It's great that it's fun. It's great that it's cute. It's great that you're charming. Show me the numbers. Show me the numbers. Show me the numbers. This is business.
But I will say, at the same time, if you just walk into Shark Tank with a page of numbers and there's no excitement about my product and my market and all that, you ain't getting no money.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You have to have a story. You have to have a numbers, and you have to have compliant risk disclosures. You know, you can't tell somebody all sunshine. You have to acknowledge that there are risks so they know you're level-headed. And then you have to have risk mitigation plans. How are you going to navigate those risks in order to complete whatever the project is? But my main point is go read a lot of business plans. You know, put yourself in a position where people are pitching you deals. Get your hands on as many executive summaries and business plans and operating plans. Subscribe to as many things as you can. Read them cover to cover and try to understand, why did they put this in here? How does this make me feel? Show it to other people. See how they react. Become a student of business plans, and it won't take you long before you recognize a good one from a bad one, and you will be able to write good ones that will attract not only capital, but evangelists, people who will go out there and promote your project because they fall in love with it, because it's not only a good deal, it's a fun deal.
I was a business management major in college, and I had one course that the entire course ended in one deliverable, which was to write a business plan. As much as we had a great instructor and a pretty good textbook, what I learned the most from was exactly what Russ is talking about. Reading other plans, seeing what other people said. Not to plagiarize, not to steal, but to model. What got you excited as you read it? And how do you make that excitement come alive on the paper? It's Ask the Guys today. Your questions are answers. If you have a question for the Real Estate Guys, go to the Real Estate Guys site at realestateguysradio.com. Click on Ask the Guys. When we come back, it's our turn to ask you a question. Real Estate Trivia is next. You're tuned to the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helms.
Real estate investment advice right in your mailbox. Sign up for the free Real Estate Guys newsletter at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you still sitting on the sidelines trying to figure out when and where you're going to buy those investment properties? Well, I'm going to let you in on a little secret. Atlanta, Georgia is still on sale, but you better act fast because the deals are almost gone. Hey, this is Ken Corsini with Georgia Residential Partners, and I want you to know that there may not be a better investing opportunity than Atlanta right now. Listed as one of the fastest growing markets in the country, both in terms of jobs and population, Forbes predicts 26% appreciation over the next 3 years. At Georgia Residential Partners, we sell turnkey, cash-flowing investment properties. We also sell wholesale properties at insane discounts. We're launching a new home construction product this summer as well, and if you're still nervous about stepping out into another market, I will personally partner with you on a small portfolio of homes, if that's what it takes. Don't wait any longer. Check us out at gainvesting.com or call our office at 770-924-5450. We look forward to hearing from you.
Memphis, Tennessee is a market that delivers in more ways than one. As home to FedEx, Memphis is one of the largest distribution hubs in the world. That means working class jobs. No wonder Memphis is one of the best cash flow real estate markets in America. And the guy in Memphis who can deliver great, affordable cash flow turnkey properties is Terry Kerr at Mid-South Home Buyers. Contact Terry through the resource section at realestateguysradio.com. And be sure to order Terry's tips for turnkey rental property investing. It's free. Just send your request to turnkey at realestateguysradio.com. That's turnkey at realestateguysradio.com.
Hi, this is Donald Trump, and you're listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. It's Ask the Guys, your questions and our answers. Hey, a great place to ask the guys anything you want is on the 13th Annual Investor Summit at Sea, and we got lots of guys and gals who are there to answer those questions. Come with us. We're going to have an extraordinary time. We always do. You can get all the details about the Investor Summit at Sea on our website at realestateguysradio.com. Just click the button that says Summit. Before we get back to your questions, it's time for us to ask you a question. It's real estate trivia. Here's how it works. I'm going to ask you a real estate trivia question, something to do with real estate, and this one is very trivial. And if you think you know the answer or you just want to take a really educated guess, you can do that by sending an email to trivia at realestateguysradio.com. Trivia at realestateguysradio.com. The first person with their right answer is going to win a copy of the great book, My Next Step, by RE/MAX co-founder Dave Leniger. It's an awesome book that has less to do with real estate than it does just his amazing story of survival. Before we give you this week's trivia question, last week on The Real Estate Guys, we asked you to name the largest shopping mall in the world based on gross leasable area. Well, it's the New South China Mall in Dongguan, China. It's the largest by leasable area and ranked second in total area to the Dubai Mall. But check it out. It's largely vacant. It's not a dead mall. Since the beginning, it's been virtually 99% empty. Here's our real estate trivia question for this week. Approximately 80 years ago, the godfather of real estate was born in a tiny little town that's population today is less than 1,000. This is also the town that world-famous catcher Johnny Bench grew up in. He wasn't born there, but he grew up there. In fact, your mom, my grandmother, babysitted Johnny Bench. That's enough clues. The question is, where was the godfather born? What city in Oklahoma was the godfather born in? So either you've listened to the show and you've heard it here, or you've met him, or the clues can put it together. But we are running out of real estate trivia questions after 18 years.
That's a tough one, man. That's a tough one. You're going to have to put on your Sherlock Holmes cap for that one.
There you go. But if you can figure that out, it's a great prize. It's My Next Step. Just send your answer or your best guess. In fact, let's do this. We'll make sure somebody wins the prize. Whoever can guess the name of the town that is the closest geographically to this town, even if you don't get the name of the town, we'll still award somebody the prize. So that'll be a lot of fun. Just send us an email to trivia@realestateguysradio.com. trivia@realestateguysradio.com. That's today's real estate trivia question. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. Our next question comes from Joel. He's from the Bronx in New York. He says this: Hello, real estate guys. I love your show and podcast, and they've helped motivate me to pursue a career in real estate as an agent and eventually an investor. My question is, some of the real estate investor mentoring programs I have researched have 50-50 equity required for every transaction that they mentor or coach you with for a period of time. Do you guys think that it's a good idea to get involved with programs like that? All right, well, first of all, that's not enough information for us to know anything about the quality of the program, but just the economic model of it, let's set that aside for a second. We'll come back to it. There's a lot of opportunities today to apprentice, to come alongside someone who's already doing it and to learn from that. And we are huge fans of that.
It is absolutely, in my opinion, the best way to learn. You learn by doing. There's so many subtleties that go on in the way people conduct business, find deals, make decisions, handle adversity, negotiate with people, that you only pick up when you're in proximity. And then dealing with the day-to-day things. You know, the devil, as we mentioned earlier, is in the details. And a lot of times, you know, you can read textbooks and listen to podcasts, and it's a lot of theory and it's a lot of big picture stuff, because it has to be, because every deal has its own unique nuances. But ultimately, it's those little things, those little decisions that you make day by day that make it come together. And so spending time with somebody who is actively doing the thing you want to do, and they're doing it well, if you can spend as much time as you possibly can watching them, and then at some point being able to assist them and participate yourself, and at some point then having them look over your shoulder when you're doing it and coach you when you hit a wall or you get stuck or need a question answered, it's kind of the way you work yourself out of being the apprentice to being independent to eventually becoming a mentor yourself, which takes your education to a whole nother level. Robert, all three of us can tell you that from experience.
Yeah, so big fans of coming alongside someone who can help kind of show you the reins. Now, what about 50-50? A lot of folks out there want a stake in your career. They say, if I'm going to mentor you, then I want to see something from it. So there's a couple of models. One is, pay me money up front, and I'll teach you some stuff, and hopefully it'll work for you. The other is, I only get paid when you profit. Okay, so both of those have their merit. Probably most teachers can't possibly figure out how to derive what the economic benefit was that their students got from learning. In a couple of weeks on the show, it's Halloween Horror Stories, and you guys are going to have a chance to meet my very first broker. And he's been in the business forever, been a real estate agent forever. Excited to have him on the show. He's a guy who was an investor, was a agent and a broker, and always instructed his agents to become their own clients and to buy property. And you'll get to hear all that from him, hopefully in a couple of weeks. But if I'm looking at what's the economic model, how do you know? I have no idea. How much do I owe him from what I learned? How much do I owe the Godfather from all the things I earned? If there was some kind of an economic deal, I don't know that we could figure it out. So a lot of times it's just, well, I pay to attend a course or I'm in a mentoring program. We have a mentoring program and we think it's awesome. But how much equity do we get in what our students go and create? Nothing. We don't have that model. Now, maybe there is a model where it makes sense to come alongside somebody and, okay, they're going to take half the deal. The big question to ask is, what are you getting for the money? What is the expectation? And is this decision to give up, in this case, half on a few deals worth what you're going to make over time? If it is, it's an easy question to answer.
Couple of ideas. First of all, I love the idea of apprenticing to somebody who is in the business. So one of the first realizations you have to have is of the many agents out there, very few of them know anything about income property. So if you're going to apprentice to somebody, make sure you apprentice to somebody who is a practicing investment property specialist. They will know what it is you want to learn. If you could find that person and come on as an apprentice, there's several different ways you might do it. You might come in as a transaction coordination specialist. You might come in as somebody who's doing research on chasing properties, making presentations. But what you're really trying to learn is how you do this game. So if you can find the right person, I would be very happy to go to work for somebody like that, share my earnings with them. I could work for a salary, but what I'd like even better is to say, okay, I'll do a piece of this action and I'll take a little bit based on what your commission is.
What do real estate brokers do? Real estate brokers have a house split. And the idea is they're going to work for a broker because they have a bigger office and they've got experience and they've got legal and they've got infrastructure. And I usually start on some kind of a split, typically 50-50. As I sell more real estate, I get more practice. I got my own book of business. I might go to 60-40, eventually 90-10. Some real estate offices operate on 100% commission where you pay a big desk fee. It's no different than being a real estate investor. As long as there's references, there's people that have done it before, you can make sure that you're going to get value.
Well, I think the thing is, as long as you're not giving a mistake in your total career, right? I mean, you're talking deal by deal. And let me ask you this. If you have 100% of nothing, what is that?
Nothing.
Right? So if you can't do it, if you don't know how to do it and you need somebody to show you how to do it, and you're not doing it because you don't know how to do it, then you have 100% of nothing. So if I had to give away 50% of something to get something, then that's more than I had if I didn't have it. Plus I get the education. So I think that maybe is a decent trade, right? And I might be able to do that 2, 3, 4, 5 deals down the road. And then I say, okay, I've learned what I need to do. I'm going to go on and do my own thing. Nothing wrong with that. Just make sure whatever you agree to Robert's point, the way to find out if it's really working, of course, you do your due diligence on the front end to see if there's references, track record, and all that. But ultimately, you know, you don't want to make a long-term commitment until you've had a few dates, until you've maybe done a deal or two and see how it really works. But the concept of a split, I don't think any of us have a problem with that. I think it's done all the time. Makes good sense. You just need to make sure it's the right person, meets your need, and you're not giving away too much to get what you're after.
It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. When we come back, we've got such a good question, we're going to need help to answer it. Stay tuned. This is the Real Estate Guys radio program. I'm your host, Robert Helm.
Need help with your real estate investment portfolio? Check out the resources page at realestateguysradio.com.
Are you ready to profit in paradise? Hi, it's Robert Helms. And if you think real estate investing means tenants, toilets, and termites, think again. Located just a short plane ride from the U.S., a virtually untouched paradise awaits. The beautiful country of Belize. When you go to Belize with the Real Estate Guys, you'll spend 4 fabulous days discovering one of the most intriguing real estate markets I've ever seen. With its jungle rainforests, pristine beaches, and 81-degree turquoise water, Belize is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. Plus, it's considered one of the top 7 tax havens in the world. And why U.S. real
real estate continues to drop, Belize property is on the rise, and many experts think the best is yet to come. But don't just take my word for it. Come experience Belize firsthand at our upcoming investor field trip. When you join us, you'll discover the many reasons we love Belize, like tremendously undervalued beachfront land, super low taxes, ease of doing business, and so much more. Get the details at realestateguysradio.com. Just click on events. See paradise for yourself. Click events at realestateguysradio.com, and I'll see you in beautiful Belize.
Are you achieving everything you want in life? What if there was a time-tested way to ensure that 2015 is your best year yet? The most successful people in life set goals and keep themselves accountable. But how? The good news is that it's not rocket science. You too can learn the skills and unleash the motivation that will create success in your life. And now is the time. Hi, this is Robert Helms, and I'd like to personally invite you to attend Creating Your Future, the 2015 Goals Retreat, January 9th to 11th in beautiful San Diego, California. This unique weekend event has been called phenomenal, inspirational, and life-changing by the hundreds of people that have attended. Find out more at realestateguysradio.com and click on events, or call 888-489-7723, extension 18. Get your life back on track, physically, spiritually, and financially. Attend the 2015 Goals Retreat on the second weekend of the new year. Click events at realestateguysradio.com. This is no dress rehearsal. Live the life you were meant to. Visit realestateguysradio.com or call 888-489-7723, extension 18, today.
Hi, this is Kim Kiyosaki. I'm the author of Rich Woman, and you are listening to The Real Estate Guys.
Welcome back to The Real Estate Guys radio program. It's Ask the Guys. Your questions, our answers. This next question is awesome. It comes from Tad, who is in Max Meadows, Virginia. He says, hey guys, love the show. I went back and downloaded nearly all of them. I have three single family houses now, which we rent out, and I'm wondering when you guys think is the best time to consider a second or vacation home. Our kids are 12 and 9, and we've looked at a lake home, a beach home, and a home in the mountains, similar to Branson, Missouri, which we would rent out when we're not there. But I haven't gotten to where I want to be yet in my investing to make sure I want to put the down payment into a lifestyle purchase. Could you guys cover this topic? Well, we can't, but we do have a guest who can. So joining us back on The Real Estate Guys, please welcome real estate investor Danny Kalinoff. Hey, Danny.
Hey, Robert. How are you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm fantastic.
You know, I thought of you instantly when this question happened because you're a guy, if the listeners recall or not, that invests in vacation rental properties, overnight properties. So quickly give us kind of the thumbnail sketch on those types of properties and what you've been doing the last few years.
Yeah. So those are properties that, you know, utilize a piece of real estate for whole different purpose than people traditionally think, which is that you use it for short-term overnight rentals rather than long-term tenants. And the operations, the management is a completely different animal with that type of property. But if you can pull everything together, it can certainly be lucrative.
Well, later in his email, Tad specifically mentions HomeAway and VRBO. Of course, those are tools that you have a lot of experience in. In fact, many of the properties that you have are the neighbors are owner-occupants, and your properties are rented almost like a hotel.
Yep, that's exactly right. Again, you're using a physical asset to its highest and best use. You certainly want to get everybody in the neighborhood on board. You don't want to become a nuisance, but you want to make sure that the community understands what you're doing, why you're doing it, and how it can benefit them as well.
And we're seeing more and more of this, not only in traditional vacation markets, but in a lot of markets where someone with a single family house will rent it out this way. So I also thought you just have insight into, here's a guy who says, all right, I'm on a path to invest in real estate. I have three single family rental homes. And at some point, you know, I got young kids. I want to have a vacation place. But when is it okay for me to buy a second home?
You have to sit back and ask yourself one critical question, which is this a lifestyle purchase or is this an investment? So that's the first question he's asked himself. And the main delineating factor is that an investment is something that returns cash flow to you and that has to make sense on a financial level. A lifestyle purchase doesn't always have to make sense on a financial level. It's something that provides you pleasure or some kind of other benefit that isn't necessarily rooted in a financial return. So for this particular gentleman, you know, the key, he's trying to essentially make the same property serve two masters. It's got to provide him, you know, fun when he wants it to be, but also a return on his capital. So he needs to sit down and I think do the analysis on, first of all, what does high season and low season look like in his market?
Yeah.
Because if he wants to stay there at the same time that all the other potential guests want to stay there, then that leaves it vacant during low season. And if he needs this to be at least a neutral or a cash flowing entity, and he plans on using it during its most popular time, then it could quickly become something more more problematic than he had anticipated.
You know, we have a couple of houses that we don't rent out, but we have there to use when we can. And I remember back when I was growing up, my parents had this cabin, and it was rented on the same kind of a basis. They had a local rental agency. It was near a ski resort and so forth. And we would, growing up, we would call up on Friday night and say, hey, is the cabin rented this weekend? And it often was. But if it wasn't, then we would go up, meaning my parents weren't going to get any income that weekend anyway. So it was okay if we used it. So your mindset here is an important one, which is if you're thinking as an investor, some of these properties that you would consider a vacation rental properties make complete investment sense on their own. And then there's the fact that, oh, when there's not people staying there, you could use it. You have several rental properties that you rent on an overnight basis that I imagine if you and your wife wanted to go to for the weekend and nobody was there, you could do that. But the purpose isn't that. The purpose is for investment.
100%. 100%. And this gentleman needs to ask himself the question, if a month goes by and I only have 3 nights out of 30 rented, am I okay with that? Can I shoulder the mortgage, the other operational expense burden of it not being rented and still be okay with that and enjoy it at the times when I want to? And if he can't, then his current investing activity shouldn't be related to this decision at all, only to the extent that his current investing activity may give him additional financial means to be able to afford a lifestyle decision like this.
Yeah, I don't think there's an answer of how many rental houses do I have to get before I have the right to go buy a vacation property, right? It's more your comment, which is great, thinking through what the purpose is. He's talked about a beach house, a lake house, a mountain house. If you're thinking like an investor, then you look at those markets and say, where could I derive the most revenue? And then what's the off season? And would my family enjoy spending time there? Kind of justifying an ROI purchase with some personal use, which is very different than no, every summer we want to go to the lake. Okay, well, maybe at that particular location, that's prime time. If you're taking it off the market, to your point, during that time, then does it even make financial sense to rent it in the off time? So great, great stuff. And I think, Ted, you've got some soul searching to do and really decide which of these two hats you're wearing. Are you an investor or is it personal use? And if it's personal use, you know, we like to say save your pennies, but every now and then you can buy a gumball, right? This is what we call a gumball, something that you would enjoy. Now, if you can also find something that pays you back, this idea of renting it out when you're not there, then that's different. A lot of us invest in resort type properties where we are banking on the fact that someone will pay more for a short stay than a long stay. If you look at the income, Danny, on some of your residential properties that you're renting out on a nightly basis, how does the income compare to what it would rent for if it was just on a month-to-month or long-term lease basis?
It's generally 2 to 4 times higher on a nightly or short-term basis.
Yeah.
But again, I just want to go back to my initial comments that is a full-time business. And there are some folks for whom that daily or short-term rental income is really about equal to what they could get on a long-term basis after they factor in all of the expenses. And you really have to, I would say, kind of know what you're doing and understand what the purpose of that property is going into it. Otherwise, you could find yourself with a whole ton of extra work and really not a lot of extra financial benefit.
Excellent point. All right. Well, good stuff. And that's about all the time we have today, but we love your questions. Keep them coming. Go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click on the button that says Ask the Guys. And then every few weeks, we like to do this very type of show. Hey, don't forget to join us on the 13th Annual Investors Summit at Sea. It's coming up. And before you know it, it's going to be sold out. We're more than 90% sold out right now, which is an awesome place to be in. But we have a cabin reserved for you. If you'll hurry, go to the website at realestateguysradio.com and click on Summit. Next week on The Real Estate Guys, we'll be talking about alternative methods of funding real estate deals. We've got an amazing attorney as our guest who's going to talk about a way that you can bring in money to your deals that you probably have never even thought of. Next week on The Real Estate Guys radio program. Until then, go out and make some equity happen.
This episode of the Real Estate Guys Radio Show is brought to you by Paradigm Life, powerful cash management strategies using life insurance. Learn more at beyourbank.com. Mid-South Home Buyers, low-cost, turnkey cash flow properties in Memphis, Tennessee. Corporate Direct, asset protection strategies for real estate investors from attorney and rich dad advisor Garrett Sutton. Find these and other great companies under the Resources tab at realestateguysradio.com. To learn how you can expose your product or service to the Real Estate Guys audience, call 888-489-7723, extension 4. That's 888-489-7723, extension 4. Or use the feedback page at realestateguysradio.com. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next week right here on the Real Estate Guys Radio Show.